Welcome and thank you for standing by for today's conference. All participants will be in listen-only mode until the question-answer session. At that time, to ask a question, please press star one. Today's conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. I would now like to turn the conference over to John Kim. Thank you, sir. You may begin.
Thank you, operator. On behalf of the U.S. Commercial Service, the Connecticut, New Jersey, North Texas District Export Councils, and International Tariff Management, we welcome all of you to today's webinar on duty drawbacks. My name is John Kim, and I am an International Trade Specialist with the U.S. Commercial Service. I am your host for today's webinar. Joining us are my colleagues, Anthony Sargas from our Connecticut office and Brian Beams from our New Jersey office. Before we begin, I'd like to note a couple of items. Sure, you're connected using both your telephone and the online WebEx platform. All telephone lines are currently on mute. We will open the lines up for questions at the end of the presentation, and we will also take questions submitted to the Q&A feature on the WebEx platform. All attendees will receive a short survey. We ask you to please consider filling these out. We read through each of your comments and use them as a tool to help us develop future programming for your U.S. businesses. Anthony will send a summary email out tomorrow that will have the webinar recording and the slide deck. Lastly, our web address has changed. Please note that all U.S. Commercial Service information can now be found on www.trade.gov. Again, that is www.trade.gov. I'd now like to take a minute to inform our audience about the U.S. Commercial Service. We are the trade and investment arm of the U.S. federal government, a division of the International Trade Administration. Our mission is to promote U.S. exports, protect U.S. commercial interests abroad, and facilitate foreign direct investments into the United States. We have a global reach. Our domestic field has over 100 offices. Internationally, our offices are located within the U.S. embassies and consulates in over 70 countries. Now I would like to introduce today's speakers. Jay Sharko is the president of International Tariff Management. With an academic background in Syracuse University and University of Hartford, he is currently a licensed customs house broker. Before co-founding ITM in 1982, he had a diversified career with Uniroyal Incorporated, holding various senior management positions. Mr. Sharko is well-versed in the intricacies of the duty drawback regulations, foreign trade agreements, and the HTS USA, and has lectured on tariff management issues at NCITD conferences, TMA conferences, and numerous individual corporate meetings. He's an active member of the AAEI and NCB-FFA duty drawback committees. Next is Tracy Hudak. She is the duty drawback operations manager of International Tariff Management. She joined ITM in 2010 and most recently served as a tariff manager for a diverse number of clientele. Prior to her career at ITM, Ms. Hudak was an award-winning writer and editor for publications and companies throughout Connecticut, Massachusetts, and New York. She received her Bachelor of Arts degree from the State University of New York College at Plattsburgh. Lastly, Jill LaMadeline is the Senior Tariff Manager at International Tariff Management. She joined ITM in 1994 and has worked in various assignments involving duty drawback, classification analysis, and NAFTA certification, and supervises several tariff managers in the area of NAFTA certification. She received a Bachelor of Arts degree from the Ithaca College in 1992 and is a licensed customs house broker. So without further ado, I welcome Jay, Tracy, and Jill.
Thank you, John. This is Jay Sharko. I'm honored by your introduction, John. We have over 30 years' experience working with U.S. Customs in the area of duty drawback. A lot of that has gone by the wayside with the new regulations and the new law. And that's why we're putting this webinar on today. We want to show people the new opportunities that exist in duty drawback. And we're going to do that in a sequential manner. I will give a general overview of the duty drawback process and how the new law opens up opportunities. Tracy, who John introduced as our operations manager, and she will give a detailed review of the, we call it the new duty drawback law, but it's actually been in place for almost 5 years now. It just hasn't been implemented properly. And then Jill will give an overview of the process for actually filing the claims under the new regulations and what's required for record keeping. The duty drawback law, original one, was passed in Congress in 1789. And the reason for that was to create jobs, encourage manufacturing, and to also encourage exports. It's amazing to me that our forefathers had the insight back over 200 years ago to see the need for these things. These are more important today than they were back then, and it would be a wonderful thing if our Congress here today could work together to help promote the trade community. Duty drawback, simply put, is the refund of 99% of the duties and taxes that are collected upon import if those goods are exported or destroyed. Not all duties, and we'll get into it as we move along in the presentation, are refundable, such as the anti-dumping duties and countervailing duties. But what is refundable are the 301 tariffs, more fondly called the Trump tariffs, which were imposed on goods imported from China. These have put a tremendously hard burden financially on U.S. firms because they do have to pay those tariffs. China is not paying those tariffs. We are. And they are refundable under the duty drawback regulations. It's also interesting to note that I read recently that they're also thinking about imposing some 301 tariffs on Vietnamese goods. So that could further be an opportunity to collect duty drawback if you do import those and export them. The opportunity is, a few years back, Customs estimated themselves that there was about $2 billion a year that was available, and only about $300 million was recovered. That number, under the new regulations, will grow significantly. I don't know if it'll grow two times or three times, but there's a lot more opportunities now going forward to claim duty drawback, and we'll get into that and explain it. Just a few points about the old regulations and the new regulations. The old law had some restrictions, and it was 3 years from import to export. So you had to use your imports up before, when you exported them, up to 3 years. And you also had to match the SKU on imported products against the exported products. The new law gives you a five-year period from import to the date of filing, and also lets you only match the HTS numbers on the items. What that means, for example, and this is a very strange example, but this is what it means, is that if you import cauliflower under HTS 074-1020 and you export broccoli, they both happen to be under the same HTS number. So the new law allows you to import the cauliflower and then export broccoli and get the duty back on the imported cauliflower against the broccoli. Sounds strange, but that's what the new law allows you to do. There are some restrictions, and there are some details that have to be followed, but basically that's what is allowed. There are several different kinds of drawback. There's manufacturing drawback, unused drawback, where goods just come in and go out, and then rejected merchandise. There are also some other specific drawbacks, which I'll get into a little later. If you can see in the chart at the bottom of this slide, here's a case where you import steel coil. You can put it into your factory down in Texas. Looks like it's Texas on the map. And make a fender out of it and export the car and get drawback on the steel coil that you imported against the export. The opportunity with manufacturing is someone else can also import the steel coil, as it shows in the top of the part of the slide. And they can manufacture a fender. You can then buy that fender from somebody, put it into your car and export it and get the drawback on the duties that they had paid your vendor on the steel coil that came in. And another opportunity for drawback is you cannot be the exporter. You might import it, you might sell it to someone domestically who then exports the car. And all of these opportunities can be tied together and give you a chance to recover the duties on the imported material. The unused drawback is what we call same condition, and that's the similar thing with the broccoli and the cauliflower. Cell phone comes in, you put it in your warehouse, you export it. You can get the duties back on what you paid when it came in. And it also covers what we call rejected merchandise. There's other types of drawback, which I will not get into, but if you're interested, we can discuss it at length individually about distilled spirits for wine and beer, and there's also a whole drawback program for finished petroleum products. The types of drawback, under the old law, as I mentioned before, you needed to match up the harmonized, you had to match up the individual SKU numbers. For example, if you were doing unused merchandise on sweaters and you imported a red small sweater, you would have to export the red small sweater. Now, if you just import a sweater, it could be red, green, blue, and you can export it. And you can export a different color sweater, a different size sweater, and still obtain drawback on that. The rejected merchandise that I mentioned before, these are a few of the restrictions that I had mentioned. Under the rejected merchandise, instead of the five-year window, you only have a one-year window between import and export. These are goods that are sold at retail. If you sell goods at retail and they're returned for any reason, you have a one-year period between the import and export to claim it. And then another exception from the five-year rule is under the substitution of finished petroleum products, there's only 180 days between import and export to file the claim. Who can file the claim? Under the regulations, the exporter or destroyer of the merchandise is entitled to claim the drawback. This right can be assigned to other people. It can be signed, for example, if you are the exporter and can assign that over to the importer. For example, if you purchase material from a domestic supplier, and you didn't know that that material was imported, but then you subsequently find out, you can go back to the importer, get the proper documentation, and when you export it, you can get duty drawback on the duties that the importer had paid. Again, if you're the importer and you don't export it, you can find out who exports your product and get those rights assigned back to you. Sometimes it's difficult if you're not the importer. The importer might not want to give you the data that's required to file the claims. And that's where a filer such as International Tariff Management or somebody else who files drawback can come in and act as an intermediary. That person can get the data, which sometimes is very sensitive because the point might be that they don't want to tell you they buy it for $5 and sell it to you for $10. One would keep that under a non-disclosure agreement, file the claims with customs, get the money back, and not divulge the fact that the importer had a much lower price. We have several programs that work in that regard, and it makes the supplier feel more comfortable in sharing the data. So those are a few of the opportunities that exist in Drawback. What I'm going to do now is let Tracy begin and tell you about the new law. As I said, it's not a new law. It goes back a while. But how it operates and what conditions would be beneficial for you to take advantage of Drawback. So thank you very much. And Tracy, please carry on.
Thanks, Jay. Hi, everyone. This is Tracy Hudak, and I am the Operations Manager at ITM. Today, I will be discussing the new Drawback law. I will start by giving you all a little history of the new law. On February 24, 2016, President Barack Obama signed the Trade Facilitation and Trade Enforcement Act of 2015, which is referred to as CFTEA. According to Customs, CFTEA simplifies and modernizes drawback legislation governing the refund of relevant duties, taxes, and fees to increase efficiencies for the trade community. CFTEA was deployed on February 24, 2018, 2 years after it was enacted. Customs allowed for a one-year transition period spanning from February 24, 2018 to February 23, 2019. During this period, drawback claimants could file new drawback claims under either the old law, known as CORE, or under the new CFTEA law. The new drawback regulations, which incorporate CFTEA, were published on December 18, 2018. Since February 24, 2019, all new drawback claims must be filed as CFTEA claims. So what are the similarities and differences between CORE and CFTEA? First, I will tell you what is the same. Those filing direct identification, unused, and rejected merchandise drawback claims will continue to operate as they did under CORE. For those claims, you still need to connect the exported part number to the imported part number and claim drawback on the value of the imported part following the allowable inventory methods. Direct identification manufacturing drawback claims will also operate as they did under CORE. You can claim drawback on the exported products that are manufactured in the United States with the use of the imported material. You can also file drawback on merchandise that is destroyed under customs supervision. What has changed? CFTEA has redefined substitution unused drawback. Claimants will no longer need to link the import to the export by the part number. Instead, they can file drawback based on the 8-digit HTS number. If two different products have the same HTS number, but one was exported and the other was imported, you can use them in a substitution unused drawback claim. Substitution manufacturing drawback has also changed. If the 8-digit HTS number of the component used in the manufacturing process matches the 8-digit HTS number of the merchandise that is imported, you can claim drawback on that imported merchandise. It does not matter whether or not the imported duty paid merchandise was used in the manufacturing process of the exported product. You can get drawback. The regulations for substitution unused drawback include a new method for calculating drawback refunds. Claimants now have to determine the average unit value of the entry summary line number of the import, compare that value to the exported unit value, and use the value that is lesser in the drawback claim. ITM's drawback software determines which is the lesser of the two. A new calculation is also used for substitution manufacturing claims. You now have to determine the average unit value of the entry summary line number of the imported merchandise, compare that value to the unit cost of the component used in the manufacturing process, and use the value that is lesser in the drawback claim. Again, ITM's drawback software determines which is the lesser of the two. There are some limitations with CFTEA. Substitution unused and substitution manufacturing drawback claims cannot include exports to Canada or Mexico. In addition, substitution unused drawback cannot include HTS numbers that fall under the other categories. This means merchandise cannot be substituted if the 8-digit HTS subheading and the 10-digit HTS subheading both begin with the term other. But you can file direct identification unused claims on unused merchandise that is exported to Canada, forwarded to Mexico, or fall under the other HTS number. In addition, TPTIA has established the first filed rule. If an entry summary line number has been used in a substitution claim, merchandise under that entry summary line number may not be used in a non-substitution claim. Similarly, if a direct identification unused or rejected merchandise claim is first filed using that entry summary line number, then that entry summary line number cannot be used in a future substitution claim. The drawback refunds have also changed. Under CORE, manufacturing drawback claim refunds were limited to 99% of the duties paid on the imported merchandise. It did not allow for the recovery of any other taxes and fees. TPTIA authorizes drawback refunds for 99% of duties, taxes, and fees, including the merchandise processing fee and the harbor maintenance fee paid on imported merchandise for both unused and manufacturing drawback claims. Unfortunately, you cannot obtain MPF or HMF refunds for rejected merchandise drawback claims. The filing process has also changed. Under CORE, drawback claims could be filed manually or electronically. Now, under TPTIA, all drawback claims must be filed electronically within the automated commercial environment known as ACE. There are also changes in the record retention requirements. Under TPTIA, all supporting records must be maintained for 3 years from the date of liquidation of the claim. In addition, forms that were once required are now obsolete. Under CORE, drawback claimants who are not the importer of record had to obtain a customs form called the delivery certificate for the purposes of a drawback from the importer of record. That form is now obsolete. Drawback claimants do still have to get permission from the importer of record to use one of their import entries in a drawback claim, but the entry information can be provided using records kept in the normal course of business. Customs has also done away with the official drawback entry form, referred to as Customs Form 7551, because drawback entries are submitted electronically. Drawback bonds are still needed in order to receive accelerated payment of drawback claims, but the bond data is also submitted electronically. ITM can work with you to obtain electronic single transaction or continuous drawback bonds. One of the most dramatic changes under TPTIA is to the duty drawback timeframes. Under CORE, there were different requirements for unused merchandise drawback and manufacturing drawback. Under TPTIA, the time frame for both is simply 5 years from the importation of the merchandise to the date of filing a drawback claim. The biggest advantage of the new time frame is that the drawback claimant can claim on exports that are almost 5 years old rather than 3 years that was allowed under CORE. Now that drawback claims must be filed in ACE, Customs has created a series of validations that a claim must pass before being accepted. These validations ensure that the claims contain correct data. Under CORE, ACE's validations were only on the import entry level. Under TPTIA, ACE validations are on the line number level. Data provided for the line number cannot exceed the duty claimed, the MPF claimed, or the HMS claimed on an entry summary line number. If any of them exceed the amount, the claim will be rejected by ACE and must be corrected. Also, the HTS numbers provided must match the HTS number listed on the line number for that import entry. Therefore, now more than ever, it is important that correct data and documents be provided and used in a drawback claim. And this concludes my portion of the webinar. Thank you for listening, and I will pass this on to Jill.
Thank you, Tracy. Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Jill LaMadeline, and I'm going to talk to you today about the duty drawback process. As duty drawback is a privilege and not a right, a claimant must request permission to file with U.S. Customs. The type of privileges you must secure will depend on what type of drawback you will be filing. Claimants filing unused drawback, where there is no manufacturing process, will want to secure waiver of prior notice and accelerated payment procedure. Waiver of prior notice, as the name would suggest, waives the requirement of prior notice of intent to export merchandise. Without it, a company would need to provide CBP with advance notification of export in order to allow for Customs to inspect the merchandise. After an inspection or a waiver by Customs of an inspection, a drawback participant without waiver of prior notice privileges would also need to provide original export documentation with each claim in order to file for drawback. Securing waiver of prior notice eliminates the necessity of filing prior to export, as well as the submission of original documentation. Therefore, an exporter can ship at will and claim the drawback within the regulated time frame allowed. A claimant will apply for a one-time waiver, which covers prospectively, and a retroactive waiver, which covers historical data. Both requests can be made in the same application and would require a complete and comprehensive set of trace documentation. This trace would track one shipment from purchase order to import through inventory and ultimately export. The very specific data allows Customs to audit the information that is available in the claimant's business operations to support proof of import and export and inventory accountability. This supporting data ensures a filer's compliance with the drawback regulations and provides Customs with assurances in order to permit them to participate in a duty drawback program. Once the waiver of prior notice privileges are granted, a filer only needs to provide the requested data to Customs in the course of an audit or desk review. Typically, these scenarios are infrequent, as Customs has done the review as part of the privilege process. The second privilege that a company will want to secure when filing unused duty drawback is accelerated payment. With accelerated payment approval, a claimant will receive payment of a drawback claim within 4 to 6 weeks, rather than having to wait for the claim to be liquidated. In addition, when requesting accelerated payment, the filer will have to choose to either post a single transaction drawback bond with each claim or secure a continuous drawback bond with CBP. ITM can assist in deciding which type of bond best suits your organization, as well as assist in securing the type that you choose. In order to participate in a manufacturing drawback program, a claimant will need to obtain a manufacturing drawback ruling from CBP. There are two different types of manufacturing drawback rulings. General manufacturing drawback rulings are designed to simplify the drawback procedure for certain common manufacturing operations. If you can comply with the conditions of any of the published general manufacturing drawback rulings, you may notify the CBP Drawback Center where your drawback claims will be filed in writing of your intent to operate under that general manufacturing drawback ruling. The Drawback Center will provide an acknowledgement letter authorizing you to operate under the identified general manufacturing drawback ruling. If your manufacturing operation does not fall under one of the general manufacturing drawback rulings, you will have to submit a specific manufacturing drawback ruling to the Entry Process and Duty Refunds Branch of Regulation and Rulings in CBP's Office of International Trade. These types of rulings usually apply to manufacturing that includes chemical processes. As with unused drawback, a manufacturing filer will want to apply for accelerated payment. Once all of the necessary applications have been submitted to CBP, you can start filing drawback claims. It's important to note that while you can file the claims, you won't receive payment until the applications have been approved. Those approvals can take anywhere from 4 to 6 months. In order to file duty drawback, there is specific data that you will need. Most of the documentation required to file duty drawback is the same basic documentation that you accumulate in your normal course of business. This has changed as the new regulations are more moderate with their requirements. Required import data can be found on the entry summary form, the Customs Form 7501, and the accompanying commercial invoices and packing lists. Very often, the bulk of the information can be found on ACE, and we can work with the electronic database and supplement with actual PDF files or hard copies. Export data can be found on the commercial invoices to your customer and the accompanying export bills of lading. In addition, you may require the B3 data if you are exporting goods to Canada or the pedimento information if you are exporting goods to Mexico. Often companies maintain this information in their database and we can work with it electronically. It is important to note, however, that you will need actual hard copies of import or export data when requested during a desk review or audit by CBP. If you are not the exporter of record, you will need to obtain an export waiver from the exporter or an affidavit transferring the drawback rights back to you. In addition to the aforementioned import and export data, you will also need inventory records to show receipt of the imported merchandise into your inventory, bills of material, and any other production documents to show the use of the imported or substituted merchandise in the finished article, and withdrawal reports showing the finished product coming out of your inventory for export. These documents must be maintained for at least 3 years after a drawback claim has liquidated. One of the biggest changes under TIFTIA is the claim time period. Under CORE, which was prior to the simplification, a claimant would be allowed to file claims 3 years from the date of export. Under TIFTIA, the drawback timeframe has been greatly simplified. It is 5 years from the importation of merchandise to the filing of a drawback claim. If there is a manufacturing process, that process must be done within the 5 years. In addition, the goods exported must also occur within that same 5-year time frame. One major advantage for the drawback claimant is that now they can claim on exports that are almost 5 years old rather than 3 years per the past regulatory drawback time frames. TIFTIA offers a significant expansion to the opportunity to file duty drawback. It is no longer necessary to always follow a SKU from import to export, but instead drawback can often be done by the HTS number. This simplification opens up a multitude of scenarios and opportunities. This is an unused example. Tariff heading 6911-10-1000 covers porcelain or ceramic chinaware, hotel or restaurant, not household. If you import restaurant plates and export restaurant bowls, they would be interchangeable when it comes to drawback. The plate does not need to be exported, nor does the bowl need to be imported. A claimant can import the plate under 6911-10-1000 and export the bowl, which is subject to the same 10-digit HTS number as the plate, and claim drawback on the duty paid on the imported plate upon the export of the bowl. Here is a manufacturing example. A manufacturer imports a dividing head, which is a machine tool that allows a workpiece to be rotated in precise predetermined increments under HTS 8466-30-1000. The imported dividing head is used in the manufacture of a polishing machine that is sold domestically. Another type of dividing head subject to the exact same imported HTS number is sourced domestically and then used in the manufacture of a grinding machine that is exported. Under TIFTIA, a claimant can claim drawback on the imported dividing head used in the polishing machine when the grinding machine is exported because both dividing heads, although different, have the same imported HTS number. TIFTIA opens up a multitude of opportunities for companies who currently claim drawback as well as those who never have. The possibilities are exciting, and we're looking forward to helping companies explore the new expansive options. We thank you all for joining us today, and I will now turn it over to John, who will facilitate the Q&A portion of the webinar.
Thank you so much. This concludes the presentation on duty drawbacks. I'd like to thank all of our speakers for sharing such a depth of experience and insight for our U.S. businesses. I also want to remind our audience that Anthony will send a summary email out tomorrow that will have the webinar recording and the slide deck. Now let's move on to the Q&A portion of the webinar. As we begin our questions, operator, would you please provide the audience instruction on how to ask a question by phone?
Thank you. And to ask your question from the phone, please press star 1. Please unmute your phone and record your name clearly at the prompt. To withdraw your request, please press star 2. One moment, please, for questions.
Great. And now as we wait for questions, I actually do have a couple questions in our queue. And the first one is, what is the minimum amount of drawback opportunity that is suggested to initiate a program?
As you probably just heard, the process is very time-consuming and very cumbersome to initiate. And we, as a filer that work with our clients, usually take a number between $75,000 and $100,000 in recovery in order to make a duty drawback program profitable and manageable. Anything smaller than that usually winds up to be, to coin an old phrase, more trouble than it's worth. Thank you for the question.
Great. Operator, are there any questions coming up in the queue?
At this time, we are showing no questions, but once again, star 1 for phone questions.
Great. As we wait, I do have one more question. If I do start a drawback program, when will I get paid?
Well, Jill alluded to that in her presentation. Once you start a program to submit the applications to get your accelerated payment and waiver of prior notice and any rulings that were required, usually takes 2 or 3 weeks to get the data and submit it. The real issue is waiting for the approval from CBP, Customs and Border Protection. And that usually takes anywhere from 3 to 6 months, not because they're asking questions, but they have a tremendous backlog of applications, and it takes time to run through it. But also, as Jill indicated, once the approval is given, payment on an accelerated basis is usually provided to you within 45 days. Again, thanks for the question.
Great. And I guess one last request to the operator. Are there any other questions in the queue?
Thank you. We are showing no questions.
Okay. Well, I guess we'll take this time to wrap up. I just want to give a big thank you, John.
Uh-huh? There's a couple questions in the Q&A that were written in.
Great.
Those. One came.
Sure,
from,
sure.
So
thank you, Tony.
One of the questions is the exporter of record the same as the U.S. PPI?
It depends. Sometimes they are, sometimes they're not. The U.S. Exporter of record, as defined by the customs regulations, is the individual company that appears on the bill of lading defined as exporter. So sometimes they could be the same, and sometimes they are not. But it's defined by who on the bill of lading is listed as the exporter for the shipment that's leaving the country.
Thank you, Jay. Another question from Eric. The manufacturing drawback example showed raw steel imported and a car exported, or a fender, or whatever you mentioned. But those HTS numbers are different, so how can you draw back for that?
Manufacturing drawback is different than unused merchandise drawback. In unused manufacturing drawback, in unused same condition drawback, you need to keep the HTS number the same. When you do manufacturing drawback, you're obviously right. A fender doesn't have the same HTS number as an automobile. What you do is you need to relate the steel going into the automobile to the automobile through a bill of materials, and that bill of materials will define what goes into the finished product, and any imported items that go into that bill of material that happen to have duty on them that are subsequently exported when the car leaves the country are eligible for duty drawback.
All right, Jay, thank you. And there was one last one. Can you file duty drawback on any exports to Canada or Mexico? If so, what kind of drawback?
Yeah, drawback to Canada and Mexico under the old NAFTA regulations and the new USMCA regulations allow the filing of unused merchandise. That's merchandise that comes into the country and then is subsequently exported. It excludes the filing of drawback on manufactured goods. That example I provided for the car with the fender, that would not be allowed under manufacturing drawback for NAFTA countries. But unused merchandise is allowable going into Canada or Mexico.
All right. Thank you, Jay. Those are the questions I had, John. Sorry, in the Q&A.
I just want to close the webinar with thanking Jay, Tracy, and Jill for the informative webinar. And also thank you to you, to our audience, for your great questions. This concludes today's presentation, and we hope you join us for the next time we set up a webinar like one of these. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. Stay safe and hope to connect with you all again.
And thank you. That does conclude today's conference. We do appreciate you attending. You may disconnect at this time.